Thank you for your attention. I'm Dan Gibbons from the City Club of Chicago, and I want to welcome so many of you back to City Club of Chicago. Thank you. What a week, what a weekend in Chicago and in the world, from the Pope at Sox Park to the federal courthouse to Iran and Israel to Minnesota, and so much happening on our streets in Chicago, at Daley Plaza, around the country, around the world. No shortage of topics for us all to get into here at City Club. But most importantly, I hope everybody had a safe and enjoyable Father's Day. Whether you're a father, or you have a father, or had a father, or might be one someday, or support one, it was a beautiful weekend. And with all that was going on, I just hope everybody enjoyed it and was safe, and that we're all moving our city and our world forward in these crazy times. And as you all know, at City Club, we come together to talk about all these great things and challenges that come with them. And I appreciate you all being here today. On behalf of our board, and we have our former chair, Jackie Robinson Ivy, with us, Jackie, and our chair emeritus, Ed Mazur, Dr. Mazur, who has taught so many, including myself, in just his wisdom here at City Club, but also has taught so many in over so many years in Chicago. Thank you on behalf of City Club. We really appreciate our sponsors, because we do rely on you to share this platform. And so I want to mention a few of them. Carnow Coinbear and Associates, the Chicago Public Education Fund, Chicago Public Schools, of course, the Children First Fund, Comprehensive Construction Consulting, thank you, Illinois Network of Charter Schools, Ingenuity, Kids First Chicago, and of course, Loyola University Chicago. Thank you to our sponsors. It is very much appreciated. This is your club, and we always try to gather the best and the brightest. So we've done that again today. Francie Harrington is here. Thank you, Francie, for all the good you do. Brenda Boyce sitting next to, from the CPL Foundation, sitting next to Jack Hartman. Leslie Roth from LJC, just some amazing people. Meyer Blank, and a great public servant for so many years. We've got really a great collection of folks here who are helping move this city forward. And I'd like to make a special mention of Bernice Martinez, Pedro's wife. Thank you. With public service comes a lot of public service from your family as well. You get brought into this. You get moved around, as I heard a little bit about. And know that you're appreciated as families of public servants and families of leaders. Folks like Pedro couldn't do what they do without that incredible support. So thank you. Thank you for indulging me in all that. I'm going to sit down with our guest of honor today and have a bit of a chat. I have about 48 questions already submitted, and I have about 30 of my own. So we're going to get rolling here. But I do, if we can figure this out time-wise, I do appreciate other questions. We may be able to get a mic out. It kind of depends on timing. But lots to cover. And so I'm going to get right into it and ask a wonderful public servant for so many years in Chicago, Pedro Martinez, to join us on the podium. Thank you, Pedro.
Here, I'll come over here.
As you all know, he runs the Chicago public school system for the last four or five years. We're going to hear all sorts about that. Before that, he was the CFO of the school system and has been at other systems that, again, we'll hear about. And as you know, he'll be leaving Chicago to run yet another system. So we're going to treat this as a little bit of a civic exit interview. and you know, ask some questions and hear about some successes, maybe some challenges, and maybe I don't know if you have any regrets. I don't. Let's get into to all of that. I'm going to sit down here next to you and encourage you all to listen in and prepare a couple of questions. Hopefully, we can get to them. Thank you, and thank you, Pedro Martinez, for joining us at City Club. Welcome back.
Thank you, Dan.
I also should say, as you know, we at City Club are not biased. We're not partisan. We share this platform with all sorts of people and all sorts of views. I like to make that clear from the start because we don't all agree. We probably don't all agree in this room. There are certainly people in this city who may not agree with certain elements of what has been done or is being done. And that's incredibly important to the dialogue, of the civil dialogue in Chicago, with all the craziness that I mentioned that's going on in the world. The fact that we can all come together here and have these great conversations, even with opposing views, is wildly important, and we are so dedicated to it at City Club. With that, I'll mention we actually have Stacey Davis Gates next week. We have mayors, we have governors. We share this platform with all points of view, and that's important to mention. And we always appreciate yours. You've spoken a number of times here, and as you mentioned, we hope this is not your last. We have a couple ideas for some bigger picture programs in the future, right?
No, I would be honored, Dan. Absolutely. If there's one thing, everybody, that, you know, mixed feelings about leaving my hometown, but I will tell you, I'm so grateful to the community of Massachusetts. They've been nothing but receptive. I'm excited about the impact that I can have in that role, not only in that region, but also in the nation. And so I was just telling Dan and Jackie, you know, one thing that, you know, I would love is to be able to speak with other national speakers to speak about what's happening in education, because this is just an amazing time in education with what's happening at the federal level and at the local level.
And so part of what we talked about was how Chicago is as the center of the world, right? But it really has been a leader in education. I mean, think about some of the national leaders and even the fact that these superintendents and CEOs have moved around to different positions around the country. I feel like we're spreading our Chicago, all the good that we're able to do here. So it's important, and there's so much coming out of Chicago. If we could start with maybe what, in the last few years, do you feel like you're leaving the system better off? And let's start there, and we can take it in any number of directions.
So Dan, you know, as a tribute to my teachers, if you don't mind, everybody, I see this is my classroom. So I want you to take this sheet that's at your table and just spend a few seconds looking at it.
You know, you didn't tell me we had homework today.
You know, good teachers don't make it feel like homework. And I want you to take a look at it just for a few seconds, you know. These are different points of evidence, we call them, around the success that we're seeing. And Dan, to answer your question, I am very proud that our students today are at a much better place in multiple areas, by the way, in multiple points of evidence than they were when I was coming into the district, you know, right, everybody, before the peak of the pandemic, when our children were some of the last groups of students in the nation that were coming back to school. To this day, our biggest struggle is our youngest students in third and fourth grade. Whether you look at the national assessments, whether you look at state assessments, they're our lowest. That's where we have the lowest proficiency rates. Remember where those children were at, you know, back when the pandemic. This is when they were starting their academic path. And we know as parents, we know as community members, virtual instruction did not work for our young children. Our older children did okay. We still graduated them. The rigor wasn't as much there, and we saw so many of our students actually delay going to college. And so studies in time will tell about what happened to that graduating cohort. But we know right now, because our youngest children are with us now, it's almost a research study in, you know, really that's happening in real time. And what I'm proud of, Dan, that as our students, though, are matriculating through the system, our proficiency rates have never been higher when it comes to literacy. We're higher than pre-pandemic levels. At the eighth grade level, everybody, we almost match the nation. And the nation has very different demographics than us. And so, you know, and of course, when you look at our high schools, what I am so proud is not only are more students graduating than ever. By the way, that has now become just the expectation nationwide. That wasn't true, you know, 20 years ago when our graduation rates were 40%. It wasn't true when I went to school almost 20 years before that, you know. And so that's not, I don't want to minimize that, but what's even more impressive about CPS, 66,000 college credits were earned by the last class that just finished up, that we just went ahead of the graduations. By the way, that is a fourfold increase, 400% from when I first started. And that's not counting the fact that our district has broken records with advanced placement, both in children getting access. So for those people who are a little older and you remember the advanced placement classes, you know, in high school, we had 27,000, just that's a class of 24 for juniors and seniors taking advanced placement classes and a record level passing and getting college credit. We don't even have the numbers for this year, but I know they're even stronger. And so while also having one of the largest international baccalaureate programs in the country. So the one message I want you to have, and by the way, this can't be done just by selective enrollment schools. We're too big. And so what's really driving that is our comprehensive high schools. We have almost 100 high schools. That is what's driving the numbers. And so not only are students graduating, they're better prepared than ever. Our metrics are at record levels. And by the way, our college persistence rate, so over 70%, 73% of our children persist in college, while we have the highest percent of students going to college right after high school, 70% of any large district in the country. So, and I have some of my elementary principals here, you know. Again, you know, the work that's happening at the elementary level, the children are just going to get that much stronger so that our high schools can continue to meet them where they're at.
So your leadership, I'm sure, had something to do with all this, right? But how could you, what do you credit with this advancement? There's been plenty invested. There's no question that there's a lot of money being pumped into the system. How it's spent is a different story. Who takes the credit for understanding that you are overarching as the leader? But what do you credit with these advancements?
So Dan, first I credit what credits do, which is our teachers and students. And I got school leaders here, I have department leaders here. We know that our work is to support what's happening in our classrooms. We have 22,000 classrooms. And look, it is, you know, I always tell our team, we have to lead with empathy. It is very, very difficult to be a teacher in today's times. Not only do you have more skepticism, you're fighting all the social media challenges that, by the way, as a parent, we struggle with our children. So even all the unintended consequences of mental health issues and what children are going through. And standards have never been higher. And I have to kind of yell that at the top of my lungs, everybody. When I was going to school, when we were graduating children back in the 80s, 90s, what was even more tragic than our graduation rates was how low the standards were. Today, the standards are at the highest level that I've seen. So, for example, everybody, you know, and look, we have a ways to go in proficiency rates. I will never defend, you know, our low proficiency rates. They need to be much higher. I will never defend that. But you need to understand the standards are much higher. So our state literacy proficiency rate is only 35%. That includes Wilmette. That includes Naperville. That includes our wealthiest parts of our state. And so, yes, we're at 31%, still above pre-pandemic levels. Too low, by the way. And again, much higher at eighth grade than it is at third grade. But we need to understand that we are expecting more from our children. And this is why, Dan, you know, I couldn't be prouder of not only the results we got, but everybody, but the way we did it. It was always with integrity. It was always with being honest with our parents, with our staff about where things were at. We've never, never hidden our challenges. You know, we're too complicated. I'm a product of the system. I graduated in 1987 when the Secretary of Education declared our system the worst system in the nation. That was my whole academic path then. So for somebody to even insinuate that I don't get it, I don't know what they're talking about. You know, for somebody who is a parent of two children right now, who will go to one of our elementary schools. By the way, my son graduated from eighth grade. I got to give him his diploma. We have pictures of him. He can't stop smiling. He just cannot stop smiling because of the joy he had going to that school. And so when I think about the vision that we're putting in place, and my team that's here, we know this. We never said we're going to do a one-year plan. Right, Paul? We're going to do a two-year plan. Right? Right, Karima? Let's do the short-term plan. Right, Mike? Let's just do, like, you know, Josh, you know, quick wins. Give me some quick wins, everybody. That's what I need. No, you know what we said? We're going to do this work well. We're going to put in practices. We're going to create conditions in our schools that We will not see the credit right away for ourselves, because it's not about us. It is about strengthening the system, and these practices are going to outlast all of us. And so over the next year, it's going to be nuts. I already told my principals, it's going to be nuts here, okay? It's going to be like, you know, the analogy I use with them is, you know when you have an accident on the highway? What does everybody do? Can't help you. By the way, you're always complaining along the way, right? When you're like, why are they stopping? Why are they stopping? Why are they slowing down? And then what do? You look. I said, that's what it's going to look like over the next year and a half here. It's going to look, you can't help yourself. You're going to look at the drama. Get through the drama. Because the practices, the conditions that we created in our schools, the way we change our financial model, the budget model, it is there for a reason. It is targeted. By the way, does it mean that we got it all right then? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. This system is complex. But does the evidence show, and this is just part of the work, and I'm a CPS kid, everybody, you show your work. Does the evidence show that we're going in the right direction? Absolutely. Absolutely. And by the way, in spite of, not because of, in spite of not having people having our backs. Can you imagine if we would have people watching our backs, the work we could have done? So that's what I'm going to leave with you. That's what I'm going to leave with you, because that's talent that is in my team. I'll tell you, I am so blessed. And look, I am excited to work with my team in Massachusetts. But the team that we built here, I am just so honored and humbled that you respected me and that you trusted me to be your leader. And I just want to say thank you, because, and thank you 1,000 times.
Can we acknowledge that team? I know many of them are here.
Can you please stand, everybody?
I think it's worth some significant acknowledgement. Please stand for the CPS team.
Oh, Paul, come on, everybody. Stand up. District school staff, too. Come on, everybody. Come on, school staff, too. Come on. Come on, all my school-based staff. You guys are... No, I mean, everybody.
I have to say that your leadership and your, you know, the, as you mentioned, the integrity with which you've done everything, what's really refreshing and really impressive from my perspective is the transparency with which you've done all this and the strategy of communicating all this in a very transparent manner. Was that intentional?
So then...
We can get in. Like, at one point, you and I even talked about having some open negotiations here on this stage in front of people and changing how things are done.
So, Dan, I think at this time in our nation, there is nothing more important than us leading with evidence and leading with the truth. And that means even if the truth is not something people want to hear. So when we did our public negotiations, and they're on YouTube, everybody, hours and hours and hours, my poor staff, you know, I wasn't there physically, but trust me, I was watching them every single minute, so was my wife. And so hours and hours, and actually, I got to give credit to Ms. Gates about that. She said, hey, I want to do things a little different. Let's put it out in the public. And I said, hallelujah. Yeah. Let's do it. Because the only way that people can understand the complexities is you have to see it. You know, then, you know, the one thing that I always wanted was to bring more of you into our schools. So you could see all of it. You could see all of the messiness, because we're dealing with kids and with families. And you know this, like none of that, I mean, especially when you're dealing with poverty, it's messy. It's messy. That's what my teachers have to work with. It's messy. And when you have kids that, like, some of these kids are so advanced, and some of my schools are so small, and we're like, okay, how do we do this, right? How do I get kids to, you know, that are ready for algebra? Only 52% of our schools were offering algebra back in 2021. We're now over 95%. And it was all my small schools that benefited the most, because we figured out how to create some really cool strategies, because these children were ready. By the way, they've always been ready. And by the way, no decline in proficiency rates. None. And we have Black and Latino students now getting access to algebra. Now, you know what my favorite thing to hear? Oh, CEO, now we got to figure out geometry. Some of our kids are ready for geometry by eighth grade. By the way, I hated geometry. But, you know, but I'm like jealous, right? I'm like they get to do that. And then why are we surprised that students can graduate with an associate's degree by the time they finish high school? That is the future of CPS, everybody. That is where we're going. And regardless of who's in my seat, nothing's going to stop that. As long as this community sticks together, and I have some more to talk about that in the future. In literally.
So I appreciate you mentioning, I mean, we talked about transparency, we talked about, you know, integrity and all the stats and the evidence. And you mentioned Stacey Davis Gates, who's actually here next week, having a similar chat. Hope you all come back for that. And she's similarly being open. And I think it was 2 years ago. You guys were going down to Springfield together, right? And that was a united front. There wasn't a strike. You know, we've been getting used to strikes in Chicago, so that all kind of went well. Here we are, and you're suing, right? What happened?
So then, a couple of things happened. So number one, everybody, this is again what I said about making sure that the truth is what's being shared. It is about standing up for what's right and with integrity. It is one thing to say that you fully support fully resourcing schools. It's another thing to say, well, you know, let's put the district in financial distress so that there's a bailout, right? And we're seeing a similar strategy play out right now for CTA. So it's obvious. Like it's, you see it. You're seeing it play out. And for me, and look, I'm a kid who grew up on CTA. By the way, one of my highest paying jobs when I was in college was a CTA ticket agent. I was, you know, I did all the breaks. So I have a lot of compassion for CTA. But how do I go to families, Dan, to say, hey, trust me, we're going to put the district in financial distress. We're going to lay off thousands of teachers, but then we'll figure out how to hire them back. Or we're going to, you know, saddle the district with, or that already has, by the way, $9 billion in debt. When I was CFO, we had the highest credit ratings, because this is going to be out there. You'll hear it. Highest credit ratings that we've ever had. We had over $1 billion in the bank. We never had to borrow for payroll. And yes, the district was still very severely, actually was smaller in terms of funding, very underfunded. The district was, we were just putting in place a lot of the transformation that you're seeing today. You're seeing a lot of the results. We were just putting in just the beginning of that work. And so now, to go fast forward, when instead of, you know, doing the right thing, instead of what the union advocated for, which is to release these $1 billion of tax, you know, property values that are being withheld from taxing agencies called TIFs, to continue to withhold that when they were supposed to expire many times years ago, when you're being asked to consider tax increases, fee increases, reduction in services in a city where we're already overtaxed, we're overcharged for everything, where my wife has to stand for 2 hours to get our children in a park district program, that's just wrong. I'm sorry, that is just wrong. And I get that you can't fix it all at once, but that is wrong. And then to go back after, you know, really, and they're the ones, CTU was the ones that literally brought to my attention the TIFs. I'm embarrassed. I was the chief financial officer. I knew TIFs existed, but I thought, okay, you know, I'm a Chicago kid. I heard about Millennium Park, and that was, at that time, was just a dream. I'm like, okay, I'm game, bring it up. Because I love going to the fountain, the Buckingham Fountain. I love the lake. And then I saw corporations moving, and I'm like, okay, Chicago is really, really becoming, you know, a national, you know, landmark for economic development and economic power. And then I come back, and now the district is the second largest junk bond producer in the country. Our credit ratings are almost at the lowest possible because we were downgraded 34 times during the 2015-2018 era. And somehow people think doing that again, we're going to have a different result because somebody has political aspirations in Springfield. Really? And again, you're seeing it play out with CTA. Let's see how that works out. Right? And they want to do that to the district. And they want me to help explain that to our teachers and to our parents, who, by the way, as you said, Dan, have been seeing walkouts every single year. I'm sorry. This is about taking a stand. This is about doing what's right. And my wife and I, to her credit, we had this talk. And she said to me, she said, is this the stand you're gonna take? And are you willing to risk everything? And I asked her, I said, are you willing to stand with me? And she said, yes. She said, yes. So that's what it is. And the reason we're in court, Dan, to be very, very clear, when the board decided to terminate my contract in that December special meeting, December 20th, leading into the vote, Dan, and Bill, by the way, Bill's a godsend, Bill Quinlan, everybody, he is my angel. He came swooping out of nowhere. And Bill said, Pedro, they're going to mess around with your role. They're going to try to compromise your role. Because I kept hearing the threats. If you don't leave, we're going to do all this to you. I kept hearing it. And Bill said, Pedro, let me do it. Let me put something in court. We can always withdraw it. If they do it right, if they treat you with respect, we can always withdraw it. All you've ever asked is to allow to do your work. That's all you've ever asked for. And you know, when they voted at that time, Dan, you can find it, everybody. It's in the record. They actually passed it with, we're going to compromise his role. We're going to violate his contract. They were very blatant about it. And then that following week, who is there at negotiations as we're trying to do the best to protect our children? Who is there in a complicit way but three board members? By the way, not sitting with us. Sitting with CTU. Strategizing with CTU. Literally telling my staff, we got this. We got this. You don't have to make the hard decisions. We're going to make the hard decisions for you. That's why there's a court. That's why we're in court, Dan. And it is about standing up to bullies, everybody. Because there are individuals right now that are unsung heroes who have been bullied, teachers, counselors, who have had no voice, who had to do GoFundMe campaigns just to defend themselves because they questioned. They questioned something that might not be right. If I can't stand up for myself, what message am I sending my students? What message am I sending my teachers, everybody? Just take it. It's Chicago. That's how it is. Because when there's absolute power, you don't have a shot. And guess what? There's absolute power right now going on in different parts of our society, isn't there? And how does that feel, everybody? So when you have absolute power, I don't care which side of the politics you're on, because it's not about politics, Dan. It's when you have absolute power, and instead of doing the right thing, you abuse that. That's what's wrong. And that's what I'm standing up for. And that's what I was willing to lose my job for. And I will do it again, Dan.
That's coming from a child of the public schools and a product of the public schools. That's a great message, like you said, to those students. Absolute power is confusing these days. Especially at this level with this school board, and it's also fresh and new. How does that? Let's just talk about that school board for a minute, and maybe without step away from the suit and your personal recent interactions. We're in the middle of a complete overhaul of this system and how it's governed. Right? What happens next? So, when you're gone.
So thank you, Dan. So here, everybody, here's where I want to give you a sense of optimism, because I am nothing but optimistic for my system. First of all, we had for the first time elected school board races, and I don't know, probably in the history of Chicago, I don't know, Chuck, how far this goes, but at least decades. And we had 10 members that bravely ran, and they all have their stories and their war stories as they did their elections. 7 out of the 10, by the way, different backgrounds. We have a few of them here today, different backgrounds, and they came together on values. They didn't agree on everything, but they came together and said, you know, we're going to do this work with integrity. We're not going to be tied to political alliances. We're going to do what's right. We're going to tell the truth. And 7 out of 10, I'll tell you, it was because it was a November election. It was a presidential election. So what makes me optimistic, Dan, and watch out for this, everybody, make sure it doesn't get changed, is that you'll have another November election, 21 board members running again, and you will have a gubernatorial election. Our amazing Senator Durbin is retiring. We'll have a senator election, and you have congressional elections. And what I saw was that people understood and really got involved in the issues of education. And you saw that in the voter turnout. And so I am optimistic, Dan, that we're going to have a phenomenal school board as this district finally becomes, and really what we always talk about, right? Because it's interesting. Everybody always talks about democracy. But isn't it interesting? Once they have absolute power, all of a sudden it's just the opposite, right? Am I wrong on that? And so,
are you referring to a parade, a birthday parade? weekend.
So I believe, Dan, that our district is going to be in good hands November 2026. So what I've told my team is you hold it together. Because between myself, Arnie, and Janice, we're the three longest-serving CEOs. There was at least 6 to 7 other people, at least. And they held it together. Our district staff held it together. I said, you just got, and that's why my analogy about, yes, you'll be driving on the highway. You got to look. You got to look at the drama. Keep moving. Look as long as you want, and then keep moving. Because November 26th is coming around the corner, and it is about accountability. It is about people being responsible, because our parents need us. Our children need us, Dan. And there is nobody that can be the holders of equity or the holders of students' rights than the board and my team. We are it. So that's what we signed up for.
Who's going to run the schools? Who's really going to run education moving forward? Is it the CPS CEO? Is it the mayor? Is it the school board? How does rubber meet the road in your?
So Dan, the one thing I love about Chicago, and this is why it wasn't just the work we did, everybody, it's how we did it. Our talent, and everybody who's been here in CPS before knows this, our talent is deep. And this is why, you know, I got criticized for giving 4% raises to our teachers. I said, you know what? The one area I'm not going to skimp on is talent. Because we don't have the teacher retention issues that other districts have. We don't have the high turnover that the shortages. Is it perfect? Absolutely not. But we don't have that, everybody. And so the talent is deep in the district. And Dan, as the district that created me who I am, those teachers that saw something in me that I couldn't see myself, because I was frustrated, I was poor, I didn't understand why I was poor, I was angry.
You're an immigrant, right?
I'm an immigrant. The oldest of 12 children. You know, I was with me and 6 girls, you know, after me, in a 2-bedroom apartment, 1 bathroom, and it sucked, everybody. I'm not missing.
Yeah, when do you fit a shower in there with 6 girls?
I had to wake up at 6 in the morning. I had to be the first one up in the morning. And so it's all that to say, Dan, that, you know, our institution is strong. It's going to outlive all of us. Anybody who thinks that we're bigger than the institution, you're going to be humbled. And that's why, Dan, I am so, so optimistic for the future of the district.
We appreciate optimism here.
So it will be the board, it will be the community, it will be our parents, it will be our school leaders, it will be our staff working together, and you just got to get through the drama. It's about a year and a half worth. Get through it. It will be fine, everybody.
So and thank you for, by the way, John Diggles had a question about the school board that led into that. I'm going to try to incorporate some of these other questions. And Sylvia Puente mentioned, first of all, thank you, I believe. Yes, from Latino Policy Forum, Pedro, I want to express thanks and appreciation. What was your biggest lesson learned?
So I think the biggest lesson learned, everyone, is that the most effective way for us to really help our children and get results, it has to be us supporting those classrooms, you know, and whatever way we can. And for us, you know, and I'm not saying we got it all right, but it was an investment in resources. So for anybody that feels that, wow, you know, you spend so much money, but let me hold another truth together. The reality is our footprint is too big. We have too many buildings. That's just the truth. And there's not a political appetite to address that. I think when we have an elected school board, that will be addressed. But the biggest lesson is that there's no shortcuts to this work. It is about leading with empathy. It's about supporting our teachers. It's about supporting our students, supporting our school leaders, getting everybody in the same direction. And there's one thing I'll take credit for is my team and I created a collective vision together. By the way, even with the board that resigned, because they were on board with it, we've developed a collective vision, and everybody was going in the same direction. And that is why we got the results we got, as well as we did it at scale. But in the same time, there's many under-enrolled schools where our children are not having a good experience. It's a small group of kids, so it's easy to overlook them because they fall, you know, the averages kind of cover them up. And that is something that has to be addressed. If there's, I don't know if it's a regret then, if there's something that, you know, I always wonder is, you know, if I would have had the political backing, could we have gotten very, very, you know, innovative? And I'll just give you one example of sharing this with Jackie. So the Austin community, which, by the way, you know, somebody who lives there keeps talking about, oh, I live in Austin, but his kids have never been to school in Austin. And so, you know, Austin is the second largest community in our city, second just to Lakeview. But only 13% of students, of high school age students, go to their high school in Austin. If every student went to school in Austin that lives there, we'd be overcrowded. So think about that for a second. We'd be overcrowded. This issue should have been dealt with a decade ago. And unfortunately, because of all the politics and just because of the pandemic, I, you know, if I would have had more time, then, and I was ready with Mayor Lightfoot to, you know, to really create some solutions there. But again, you know, so these are things that I call work that he still needs to be done. And I say that to everybody. There's just a lot to be done, but there's solutions there. The kids are there. It's just sad that they don't, you know, and by the way, it's much more complicated than just education. It's about safety. You know, when we went out and did roundtables with the mayor, the most crushing thing I heard that just broke my heart in many of these communities was, and this was directed to the mayor, he would say, I feel good, I feel safe at school, but what can you do to keep me safe in my community? What can you do to keep me safe when I'm walking home or when I'm coming here or when I stay late for programs here and then I have to worry about something happening to me? What can you do for me? That was the question, everybody. And I got to tell you, as a parent, it broke my heart. It broke my heart because I remembered myself, my parents couldn't go and drive me to school and pick me up. That wasn't a thing. I had, you know, it was literally, I had to go take CTA. That's why I'm so, you know, I have a lot of empathy for CTA. You know, that super transfer, oh my God, Sunday, that was like magic. You know, that was like a magic power. Those of you who are old enough, remember the super transfer on Sundays? Oh my God, that was like the coolest thing. Got to explore the whole city on a Sunday. I don't know if that exists anymore, but you know.
I think it does. Well, maybe that's something you have your stats and data, and it seems like we are off to a decent start this summer from a safety perspective. You know, the stats are down, the crime stats are down, the murder rates. It's all too much, but perhaps you could take a little credit for that as CPS. I mean, that is something that I think we talk about gun violence, we talk about gangs, we talk specifically about kids and opportunities for kids that shouldn't be getting into that. At some point, we should probably give a little bit of credit to when things are getting better. And it is a whole approach, and I think education has a whole lot to do with that, right?
Yeah, Dan, you know, one of the things that I love about our schools is our schools, there's no such thing as, you know, extended vacations anymore. We have summer programming going on. We also have summer programming with our partners, our non-for-profit partners, our churches. And I really do believe, you know, and I'll just say this, Dan, in terms of, you know, I'll quote my chief of labor, you know, who led us through all the negotiations with the Chicago Teachers Union. And he said, Pedro, I've been doing this for a long time. You're the most aligned CEO that I've ever seen to the current union in terms of you have a similar vision about being comprehensive and how we support our children. And so, again, you know, this issue of absolute power wasn't in place. It's a wondering for him of what, you know, what could have been different, right? Because the truth is, Dan, in terms of, you know, our partnership with the parks, with the community, with not-for-profit organizations, we're making this not only the system stronger, but the city stronger. And it's showing up. And you know, and I got to tell you, I have nothing but respect for our police department, for our district attorney. It's a whole team effort that I am seeing. And again, it makes me even that much more optimistic for our city.
Great. And John Cunningham Elder actually mentioned, and this was something I wanted to get into, but he asked how you contrast challenges and opportunities of leading large districts like SAISD and CPS. I'd like to take that and broaden it and just say, you know, you've been around the country. You are from Chicago. You spent most of your life here. But where do we compare to other districts, and what are we? Yeah.
So what I would say, everybody, is that Chicago, because we put in strong talent systems, and Ben Fulton here is with us. I mean, who's leading amazing strategy work in our talent department. We put in strong talent systems, and the leadership programs that we have here are at all levels. So the teacher leadership programs, I mean, they're just, you know, some of the best that I've seen in the country. How much we invest in principal leadership, again, some of the best in the country. And now we're even doing a lot more at the central office level. And so, Dan, there's no shortcuts to this work. It's about leadership, and it's about aligning, having a clear vision, aligning the resources. So that differentiates the district above everybody else. And what's fascinating is, at the same time, I've never seen the kind of handicaps that exist in the system. They're unique to Chicago. So all the governance issues, right? The fact that, you know, we're going through so much shift and so much change and so fast. I mean, look at how many board members I've worked through just in my first, you know, just in 4 years. And you also have, you know, the complexities of, you know, we don't, you know, the district doesn't choose principals. Local school councils do. I'm not saying that's good or bad. I just say it just creates a nut. So whenever a local council gets upset because they put in a principal and then they have regrets and they come back to me and it's to say, why didn't you, you know, get rid of them? I'm like, that's not the way it works in Chicago. By the way, everybody's shocked around the country when I tell them that. Nobody understands that because that it doesn't exist anywhere else. The fact that we have this complicated financial system of two pensions, who, by the way, there's a conflict of interest there in terms of who governs them, and it's Chicago taxpayers that are paying the tab on both of them. This issue of TIFs, I dare anybody in the audience, any of the researchers, find me another district, another city or state that has $20 billion, you know, of, you know, and you could do it relative in comparison to their local economy, of properties that we don't have access to. And we haven't had access to for decades, everybody. And so when you're, you know, really, you know, hamstringing the district in this way, and then you're complaining, oh, you don't do enough of this, enough of that, enough of this. I mean, Dan, you know, for me, you know, and at the same time, I'm seeing the talent of both our students and our staff. So I will say it's a huge opportunity. It's a huge opportunity for leadership. It's a huge opportunity if we can hold elected officials accountable. And I've always said this to our state leaders. I've said this to anybody who listens to me. This district, compared to not only anybody in the Midwest, but in the country, really outperforms. And what you don't want is for our district to go down a path that's happened to Detroit, that's happened to Cleveland, that's happened to Minneapolis, that's happened to Indianapolis. And by the way, I know those leaders, and I respect them. But those districts will never come back to their heyday. So say what you want about us. If you look at our evidence, clearly outperform. Our children do so much better here. And by the way, again, does it mean that we don't have a ways to go? We have a ways to go. But with that, when we see the leadership that's being produced, Dan, that's why, again, I have nothing but optimism and hope for our city, because I'm seeing the results of all these students graduating. And by the way, graduating where, you know, whether they're going into the trades, whether they're going to college, I mean, they're graduating and they're energized. I mean, they're energized. And by the way, I'm going to say my age here. I love seeing so many of our young leaders, former CPS, and they're adults and professionals. I have nothing but pride. Because for those of us who came up, you know, during my era, there wasn't many of us, especially Latino and Black leaders. There just wasn't. And so now you're seeing the numbers really, really, and that only makes our city better, everybody. It only makes us even more wonderful. And so, again, that's why I'm going to continue to say this, Dan. You know, as much as, you know, I will speak the truth, I will also tell you, I think the city has a bright future.
We love to hear that, but we also, especially at City Club, appreciate that we have to address all these challenges. And another thing that we're trying to do is identify the next generation of leaders who are getting involved. And that starts with students. That is the future. And we are committed here to having them involved and engaged. They have solutions that we maybe haven't thought of, or innovations that so many haven't even had opportunity to access, you know, that they're now accessing in the classrooms or outside of the classrooms. So thank you. Thank you for that reminder. We have a few minutes here. I have a few more questions. Oh, we only have 10 minutes. So I do have a microphone up here. I'm going to ask, is Caleb here in the room? If not, I can grab it. And does anyone have a question that they'd like to ask themselves? I know I've tried to incorporate a few of your questions into this conversation. And I have a number more. So we do have one here. So give me a second. I'll find this microphone. Yep. And share it for a moment. My Phil Donahue impersonation here. Let's make sure it works. Okay, please introduce yourself and ask your question.
I'm Karim Mohammed, and I'm with the Ingenuity Board. Question for you. The statistics you have here are very impressive, and yet when you look in the press, Chicago Public Schools get a pretty bad rap. What is the issue there in terms of disseminating this information, and why isn't the story known more widely?
Yeah, you know, what's fascinating, and we say this a lot in our team, we get a lot more love outside of our city than we do in our city. But I will tell you, you know, what's been fascinating, so when I got here, and we have an amazing communications team, by the way, an amazing. I mean, they respond to everything, and I mean, there's always something going on in our district because we're so big. But the one thing that I'll tell you that I really love is that we created a very strong internal communication. So our parents, our staff, and I really believe that was a big part of our strategy as we're getting better and better results. So I'm going to be a little naive here and say this, that as the district continues to build that muscle with internal communication, I think it'll get stronger with external communication, because there's a lot of history, and unfortunately, you know, I remind our school leaders this: we have parents and uncles and grandparents who, even though their children are doing better, they didn't have a good experience in our system, and so we can't forget that. And so they're coming into these schools already with a lot of skepticism. Sometimes they don't believe the results. It's going to take time to win them over. And so that's why, you know, our strategy around internal communications was so vital for me. And over time, I've seen our media is getting a little bit more balanced. But it's going to take time. But the advice I would give to, you know, any future CEO, future board members, you keep telling the truth. Keep backing it up with evidence. Over time, things change, but it's going to take time. I've been in districts, everybody, where they didn't start out with all this negativity, and it just feels different. It feels different, right? And so we just have to understand that when, you know, go back to the statement I said, when in 1987 our system was declared the worst system in the country by the Secretary of Education, how do you overcome that, right? So, I mean, you know, if you think about the history that we have, and so for me, there's no other way to do it except, and all of our metrics, it's interesting, our enrollment metrics have stabilized. You know, we stopped losing children 2 years ago. Now, some of that has been our new migrant students, but when we look at metrics of families leaving, we have the least amount of families leaving, and we're gaining more families in all nationalities, you know, and so... Again, you know, you're seeing that's why the internal communication for me has been so important. And now that we've expanded preschool, as our results get stronger, I think the system will be able to be, I believe, will be more stable over time.
I think we have time for one more. Does anyone else, hopefully up close, have a question here? Yep. I'm going to make my way back there so we can all hear you. And we do have people tuning in online, so... Thanks.
My name is John Cunningham-Elder. That was my written question. But I'm curious, as you head to Massachusetts and as you think about probably for the short term, Mayor Brandon Johnson's kind of second half of his term, what hope you might have for him and his partnership with CPS and a new leader?
Yeah, no, thank you for that question. And this is a great point to end on. So, everybody, the two things that I see is one... And you're going to hear a lot of noise about our budget. So we put out a budget. By the way, we asked for guidance from the board. We gave them different scenarios, and in essence, what I got from everybody, including the mayor's office, is they didn't want to see cuts. And so we put forth for our schools a budget that really, for the most part, protected our schools and our investments. And even though it is counting on revenues right now that haven't been committed, the revenues exist. So what I really hope that Mayor Johnson, our board, our communities, everybody comes together. There's $3 billion in the bank. By the way, that number is low because we get the data, it's always a couple of years behind. The numbers just grow every year because it gets replenished by more than $1.3 billion every year. That's how much these TIFs are producing. Half of that money would be in CPS's coffers, both in the bank and coming in every year, if TIFs didn't exist anymore. So what I really hope is that you don't need a new tax. You don't need any kind of irresponsible borrowing. You don't need more fees. These taxes, you're already paying them. By the way, you think they're going to us. So if you live in one of these TIF districts, you don't even know it. And then on your bill, it says CPS. It says Chicago Park District. It says community colleges. And it's in our wealthiest areas. So congratulations if you live in our wealthiest areas, in downtown, in the Gold Coast, in the West Loop. Whether you're a renter or owner, by the way, you're contributing to it. And so, really for me, what I really want is for the city to come together to address this issue, because as the evidence shows everybody, the talent we have in our staff, the talent we have in our students is undeniable. If we continue to work together and continue to go in the same direction, there is no limit to what our children can do. And there's no limit then to what this economy can look like in Chicago, how strong these communities can be. I'm excited, to go to Massachusetts. I'm excited about the impact that I will have at the state and national level. I will always be watching Chicago. This is my hometown. And for me, everybody, it has truly been a privilege to be your CEO. It's truly been an honor to have the trust of our community and our family members, Dan, because as a CPS student myself, as a parent of two children, know that there is nothing more important to me than the success of our children. And again, just been, I feel blessed to have had this opportunity, Dan.
Thank you. Thank you. It has been an honor to have you here a number of times, like I said, but today really appreciate your time, your transparency, your passion for what you do is undeniable. I see it right up here real close and personal, and it's incredible. Your passion for your team and for, the teachers, the principals, what you're all doing, but especially for the students, is undeniable. And we appreciate you sharing that with us here and all of your service over so many years. We hope you'll be back. Thank
Absolutely.
You, Pedro
Thank
Martinez.
You. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Dan.